This is First Cast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to First Cast. This is Matt Crass, now from 358.
This is Adam Richards from Team 1341.
This is Joseph Matt, 384 alumni from Dayton, Ohio.
John V. Noon, alumni of Team 229.
All right, everybody, we're here to discuss this year's 2006 First Robotics Competition, Aim High.
All right, I absolutely love this game. It's a really open field. The robots start in the center of the field, facing each other, and then they have a 10-second autonomous mode, and they have to drive to the other end of the field to
I'm interested in the autonomous mode. I like that they shortened it to 10 seconds. Last year, we saw a few teams that had autonomous modes that would just stop after about 8 or 9 seconds, and the field was dead for 5 or 6. What do you guys think of that?
I think the dead robot time was terrible. It was always kind of humiliating to see these robots just sitting there doing nothing. I think it'll be much more exciting for TV and for the crowd to have a shortened period where the robots are playing right up until the buzzer.
Yeah, also, I like that they made autonomous mode worth something this year. Last year, if you did it, yeah, you could maybe get a few points knocking the magnet Tetris. Nobody ever got the vision to really work except for a few teams. This year, there's a nice incentive, and it's much easier, so I hope we'll see much better autonomous.
Yeah, what I really like is that teams could get up to 100 points through the entire autonomous mode, potentially making them win the game in the end, just from autonomous.
Well, yeah, but that would require all three teams to score 10 balls through the center goal. That's not exactly a small feat. But it may happen. I'm expecting to see it happen once.
I've been talking with a lot of people who actually think this game may overvalue autonomous mode. They've certainly put an emphasis on it, but it seems like in order to emphasize autonomous, they've almost downplayed the rest of the match. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the whole thing ends up.
I don't think so. I mean, especially with the 3 40-second periods, you keep drivers on their toes. You gotta watch the clock and know what you're doing. If, you know, you're 20 seconds the other team's scoring time and you're still scoring, something's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it really matters that much. I mean, you're only in autonomous for 10 seconds. During the second period, the winner of the autonomous period goes into defense and the loser of the autonomous period goes into offense. I don't think this is really the best option because then the people who are on offense in the third period technically would get a minute and 20 seconds of full offense.
Well, that's the point. That's the incentive for the autonomous mode. You want it, now you get a bonus.
Well, the main problem with that is this could devolve into a very defensive-minded game, in which case the best time to score is during autonomous, which is what I was saying about how it may be overvalued. I mean, it seems almost like if you could score all 10 of your balls in autonomous, you're going to win that match.
Yeah, but honestly, how many teams do you think are going to be able to pull that off? Even with the camera, the illuminated target, and all the toys they gave us, it's still pretty easy to miss. A lot of that goal up there isn't open. There's a lot to hit.
Actually, I think it's going to be a lot easier this year. If you noticed the field, they've actually illuminated the green sensor. So when your robot's scanning, it's a lot easier to see, and it won't fluctuate much between matches, say if like a door opens and the field lighting conditions changed. Also, you have a range sensor.
True, but the thing is, I mean, with the illuminated... Last year, the vision Tetris didn't work very well because you couldn't log on. So nobody really knows what entails past locking on. Everyone was so focused on that. This year, everyone's like, oh, it's illuminated. It's going to be so easy. Yeah, it'll be a lot easier to lock on. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy to get it in there. Once you're logged on, there's still a lot that has to be done. There's a considerable amount of trig, which is still difficult even with the new chip, just to calculate where the goal is relative to your robot. You still have to line up. You have to shoot. There's all kinds of things that go wrong. An imprecise shooter mechanism, something hits you, a billion and five things you still have to worry about. I think people are underestimating how difficult it'll be to score.
I don't think anyone's really underestimating it. I mean, you hit on the key point there that this is a very tough mechanism game. It seems like everyone almost immediately knows exactly what they want to do, and that, you know, most teams are thinking, well, we got to design some kind of shooter. But, you know, saying we're going to design a shooter and actually doing it are two very different things. It's a very challenging game from the engineer's perspective. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of challenge to that. We should see a lot of really interesting ways to accomplish it, but I'm wondering who's going to pull it off the most elegantly.
As a guy who came from a team where we basically won two regionals with a pusher bot in 2003, I really think that shooting will be important this year, but I don't think we should discredit just pushing into the side goals. I think that's really beneficial to new teams, and I think that will win a lot of matches.
I definitely think that'll sway, especially I like the dynamic scoring now, where once the ball goes in, it's counted, so it'll be thrown back out in the field, you can try and get him again and just keep scoring. So you have more or less a constant supply. If you can do it reliably, you can rack up quite a bit of points doing that.
I love the new field. I really like the real-time scoring. Hopefully they'll like somehow tie it into the real-time scoring mechanisms that they've tried to work on the past few years.
Yeah, I don't think we've had a real-time scoring game since, was it 96? I don't remember. Maybe John could help me.
95.
Yeah, okay. There
it was 1995 when you had to put the balls up through the football uprights back and forth, and the more times the ball passed through the uprights, the more points you got.
Yeah.
I think that was the last time we had.
If memory serves, back then, they had a ref stand there and count it.
Yeah, and there were actually teams that could put it through fast enough that the refs kind of lost count and just kind of said they won.
So, I mean, I was wondering about that until I saw the automated scoring mechanisms. Now, I mean, did those come from IFI, John? Can you tell us anything about those?
No, I don't know anything about those. I don't think we developed those down here. I'm pretty sure they were done in Manchester.
Alright, I'm just wondering how reliable they are. Are we going to have a situation where a lot of teams score like 10 or 11 balls at once and it's only going to register half or something? That would be bad.
I'm sure it's been tested to the point where it's reliable. I wouldn't really worry about that.
Just like they tested last year's CMU cam?
Alright, well, we'll drop that one there. Anyway, I think this year it's going to be a little worse for safety. I mean, the whole thing is, like, this is the first year they're having real projectiles being thrown across the entire length of the field.
Well, there are some rules on that. I mean, your robot can't get higher than 60 inches, so unless you're trying to, it's going to be pretty hard to shoot over the barriers. I'm worried about the people on the sides, though.
That's why they have the muzzle velocity rule. I mean, you can't really get that ball going fast enough to hurt someone. I mean, maybe up close to the robot, but those people on the sidelines, if they get hit by a Nerf ball that's only going, what was it, 20 meters per second or something like that? 12 meters per second? That's not going to really do any significant damage.
Yeah, I remember people were saying that, like, even they could throw it harder than that, and even when they were throwing it harder than that, it wasn't making much of a difference, so it's going to be pretty fine for them.
I'm still waiting for the first person to get caught off guard by a Nerf ball and fall down and hurt themselves. I don't really think it's the Nerf ball that'll hurt them, but if you're walking and something randomly hits you in the side of the head, you know, it could throw you off. And as much as you should pay attention, not everybody does. You see it everywhere. You see it at baseball games. Two people aren't watching. Ooh, foul ball. They're gone.
Well, I think the bigger safety danger in first has always been arms and robots extending over the side of the field. And obviously, we don't have to worry about that this year.
Yeah, did you guys read about the new penalties for this year? If a robot were to actually go outside of the field during autonomous mode, they have to get they're allowed 10 seconds to get back into the field somehow if they step over the boundary or anything. But if they do it during the match, they just get completely disabled.
I'm pretty sure that's the same as last year's rule.
Right, but if you remember, you could still stick part of your robot outside.
In fact, the game kind of required it. Also, one thing that strikes me as interesting this year, I saw on the kit inventory that we still have the LED flashers, but now they've added flags to it. What's the purpose of the flags?
Probably just to help indication for people standing on the sidelines, but I really don't understand why they have them too.
Well, I think anything that helps the audience understand which robot belongs to which alliance is a good thing. I mean, there have been complaints about the flashers, so maybe this will increase the visibility. I guess we'll find out at the first regional.
If you have two robots on opposite alliances that look roughly the same, like something like Niagara First did last year, it'll be pretty hard to figure out which one is which if they're in a battle with each other.
Not to completely drag away from the topic I brought up, but I have another question. Like I mentioned before, there's a 60-inch height ceiling now. How exactly are they going to enforce that? I mean, I can understand if your robot goes wildly up, like to 70 or 80 inches, it's kind of obvious. But if you have someone that's consistently going to 62, 63 inches and shooting, that's pretty close, and from 10 or 12 feet away, it's going to be hard to eyeball that and say that it's definitely over 60 or definitely not. Any ideas on that one?
I think it'll be pretty apparent during inspections what robots have mechanisms designed to go above 60 inches. I mean, even if you stick the robot inside the sizing box and say, run your mechanism, it'll be pretty obvious if you're hitting the top or not.
I suppose, but some mechanisms, just the way they're designed, would be able to go over 60 inches, even if it's not the intent to use it that way.
Well, then I believe, like I just said, they'll get caught during inspections and asked to fix it before their first match.
Don't design something that can go over 60 inches, which unfortunately could limit some designs. That's why I don't like the rule that much. I understand the intent, but I don't think it's implemented well.
Well, it seems like the purpose of that rule is really to force teams to shoot the balls as opposed to just placing them in. I mean, we've really got a good case of midget basketball going on this year. We'll see how that plays out.
I mean, if you think about it, the worst possible thing that could happen is a team puts out this giant spatula right in front of the center goal and blocks every team from going out.
I mean, that brings up another question. Now, if memory serves, with the rules, they say if you're going up the ramp for the bonus points, you are not subject to that ceiling, or the ceiling's raised or something like that. Basically, it means if you exceed 60 inches going up the ramp, you're not penalized. Am I right on that one, or close, or...
Well, I think it means that if your robot's diagonal, you know, such that if you have a 60-inch tall rectangle and you tilt it diagonally, that corner is going to be longer than 60 inches. That's what they were trying to emphasize there, is that the intent is that when you're on the flat floor, it seems like you have to be under 60 inches.
So, If you were to take that big rectangle at 16 inches, drive it up onto the ramp, I don't remember how tall it is, so I'm gonna use 20 inches as a number. Now your top point's at 80 inches. Are you still allowed to shoot balls from there, or when you're on the ramp, you can't shoot?
I'm pretty sure the intent is that the robot is 60 inches resting on whatever surface it is. I mean, it shouldn't be a problem to shoot from the top of the ramp. Otherwise, that'd be
Well, because that
silly.
would give a team on the ramp a slight height advantage.
Well, isn't that the point? They get a height advantage for actually being able to climb the
I
ramp.
thought the ramp was for bonus points.
Yeah, the rule right in front of me. I had the rule right in front of me right now, and it says a robot may not extend above 60 inches above the floor or the alliance platform in a stable configuration at any time during a match.
Well, there you go, folks. Always revert back to the manual for your answers.
Good life lesson.
So what do you guys think of the kit of parts this year? Anything new that, you know, piqued your interest?
Actually, yeah. I saw some Rockwell Automation IR sensors in the kit. I can't seem to figure out what they're used for. At first, I thought maybe so you could build your own automatic score, but from what I see, first is using cameras and other sensors, not IR.
I found it interesting that they included the camera with Picasa software. I know it doesn't really deal with the robot, but how Woody said that it's going to have to tie in with Google somehow. I'm really interested how that's going to work out. And yeah, I mean, you're going to upload pictures to Google, so it's going to be interesting. I wonder what they're going to do with that.
I appreciate the donation, but if they can't be that good quality if they gave it to every team. So, I mean, I know my camera is way better quality, and I'm probably going to be using that for most of my pictures. The Picasa software is compatible with just pictures from any camera, right?
Yes, it is.
Anybody know what that IR stuff is for? Guys?
The only thing I could find is that it's for any applications where broken beam detection is useful and an important requirement. I guess it's so you can detect when you're able to shoot.
I don't know a lot about the sensors themselves, but couldn't you use it on the robot to sense where a ball was in your mechanism as far as, okay, the ball's in position, you know, fire the shooter?
I never even considered the use on a robot. I figured it was meant for maybe the field or something.
All right. Have you any of you guys look at the new vision system with the brackets?
Which I think will help a lot of teams. There was some trouble last year building a reliable mount for it.
Yes, it is the same CMU2 cam. It's just got a new standardized pan tilt, which teams can use or not use. I know a lot of teams bought pan tilts or designed their own or just mounted their camera stationary last year.
Well, who foresees the camera being used during regular driver time? A lot of people talk about its uses in autonomous, but I don't know. Maybe there's something you can use it for.
I think it'd be used during regular drive time.
Seems like if you had the software to pull it off, that'd be a great thing to do. If you had a shooter on a turret and a camera that always locked onto the goal, you could drive around the field and do whatever you were doing while you're lobbing balls into that center goal. That'd be a really incredible offensive machine. I hope we see something like that this year.
Not necessarily. You ever see what happens when a Nerf ball hits a camera?
Just put a dome around it like what we did for 2003. We put a little cage around the rotating light in case we spinned over. Yeah, I mean, we flipped over. I think we may see some sort of polycarbonate put over the camera so it'd be protected and not thrown off or anything like that.
But couldn't that possibly discolor your detection?
It's possible, but I mean, it's better than getting thrown off.
Yeah, and if you calibrate the camera properly, it'll adjust for it, so.
I think a combination of, like, what Wildstang had in 2003 and a combination of, I don't know, a turret-style shooting mechanism would be amazing, just to see the robot stay perpendicular to the alliance station, just move around and pick up the balls and shoot them at the goal. I would pay money to see that, truthfully.
I don't think you're going to see a lot of that, except for maybe one or two teams. That would be very nice, but it, I mean, just I'm trying to think of it from a programming aspect. Tracking a robot's orientation, position on the field, where the goal is relative to it, where your turret's pointing, all of that. That's a lot of sensors, a lot of processing. Like Dave said, if you try to do too much with the chip, it's going to be a pile of slag on the floor. So, you know, it's doable, I think, but you're going to need some really good programmers who really know how to use a tight system like this. So, no offense to a lot of teams, most of them don't have that, so don't expect too much of it.
All right, guys, I'm going to move back to the game here. I'm mostly looking at the offside rule right now. What do you guys think about it?
I find it interesting. What if, theoretically speaking, you're on your offensive side. It's your offensive period, you're okay. In 10 seconds, it's about to end, and you get hit. Your motors pop off or something. You're stuck. Now, what do? You switch over to your period. You're stuck. You can't get back. I mean, I suppose your lines could send just one robot back or something. But, I don't know. Horrible situation.
Well, that's what you'd have to do. I mean, you can see why you would have the offensive, or why the backbot rule, the offsides rule, because you really need to force that 2 versus 3 action as opposed to 3 versus 3. And 2 versus 3 when two robots are forced to play defense, it opens up a lot of strategic options that wouldn't normally be there for the offensive teams. If you had a straight 3v3, then it probably wouldn't have the same game dynamic and probably wouldn't play out as well.
What's been really focused on a lot during the kickoff from what I saw was thinking on your feet in terms of the drivers. So I, because Woody said it, I believe. I think Dave may have said it. I'm not positive, but I think they're really trying to emphasize the drivers thinking on their feet and not just driving around and trying to cap Tetras or throw balls in goals.
Mm-hmm. The thing about this year's game is your objective changes at least once, maybe twice during the game. So I think that'll be interesting because you're doing something and then suddenly now you have to go do something else. Last year it was always pick up a Tetra, put it on a goal. Pick up a Tetra, put it on a goal. So, I mean, you're going to see some interesting strategies this year, I think, because there's just so much more stuff to be done, and at any given moment, your objective could just change.
I mean, but going back to the offside rule, what if a team were to push you back across the center line? I mean, if you didn't have that decent of a drivetrain, would you get the 5-point penalty? Could you just constantly get it?
I don't know. I would think that would fall under an interference penalty, forcibly pushing someone else into a penalty zone. I think it was the same thing with last year, where it was a penalty if you got touched while you're in the loading zone. But if you're in a pushing match, they didn't want you to back into the loading zone to give the other team a penalty. So
who's got that manual in front of them?
I really should have it. Well, Adam, I think you have the manual, right? Can you look that up for us?
Which part are we looking up again?
I'm not even sure. I guess it would be the section where the penalty is listed. Does it say anything about being forced over by another robot?
All right, during the second and third periods, the alliance on the defense must keep at least one robot in the half field. Multiple alliance robots are permitted in the furthest half of the field. Robots of the same alliance may dynamically change the designation of the backbot during defensive period, as long as there are at least one backbot during the entire period.
Well, I'm sure it's one of the things we'll be seeing in the Q&A, so I'm just wondering, is there, like, anybody have an idea of maybe the top 10 questions about the game that people are going to likely ask? That hopefully we can answer for them.
Actually, I think there's one thing on Chief Delphi. Let me just see if it's up right now.
Yeah, Chief Delphi has been a little loose lately.
Hopefully Brandon will have this fixed by the time this episode comes out.
If you're listening, Brandon, Adam probably knows where you live. He seems to stalk people, so we'll probably come hurt you if you don't fix the site.
Don't tell him. God, you're ruining everything.
I really think Brandon could take out Adam. That's just me.
I would pay money to see that.
All right, Brandon, you, me, Nationals, let's go. All right, anyway, moving on.
Well, actually, Adam, before we move on, I'd just like to take a moment to bring up a point. You know, I know you guys do. I'm frequently a visitor of the Chief Delphi forums. You know, those forums are becoming a really important part of First. People have questions, they go there, they can usually get help. So just one thing, despite the death threats right there, I wanted to thank Brandon and Team 47, especially Brandon. I mean, he's done a great job, and I just want him to know we all appreciate what he's doing. So I'd like, you know, I'd give him a pat on the back, but I can't reach it because he's huge. So, you know, he towers wildly over me. I remember at Atlanta looking up at him. So I can't pat him on the back, but I can thank him. So I'm going to do that. And, yeah. Thanks, Brandon. You're doing a great job.
Ditto. I have to agree. Brandon and everybody at Chief Delphi and all the moderating crew, thanks for all the hard work you've done. Thanks.
I think everyone in First definitely owes a debt of gratitude to Chief Delphi. Since it's come around, they've certainly pulled the community together, and I know we all definitely appreciate it and all the hard work they do to keep it
going.
Yeah,
I know. I mean, when my team has a question, if, like, the Q&A sort of, I don't know, a bit the answer that they give, if it's a bit questionable, like, it's just like a yes or no when we're asking for a detailed answer, then we probably go out and ask Chief Delphi, and it's really helped clarify a few things for us.
Yeah, it's a great site. Thanks again, Brandon. And just one more thing I wanted to bring up. CD posters, there's a lot of them. You know that. A lot of you guys are very helpful, but some people, I think, really need to go back and reread the rules. I think maybe all of us should go back and reread the rules, because we all make some mistakes. But lately, there's just been a few incidents. I've seen, in one case, where an honest mistake was made regarding a post information, a number, actually. And an engineer jumped on the student making the post. It was very sarcastic, just not very helpful in any way. Very sarcastic and condescending and kind of, I don't know, non-mentorish. It wasn't very inspirational, that's for sure. I mean, if somebody did that to me, the last thing I would come away with it was feeling like I'd been corrected or learned anything. I would have just felt stupid and upset. So I'm just asking everyone, you know, watch how you post, read the rules. If it's not helpful and if it's not nice, don't post it. So I, you know, it's just something I felt needed to be said. And I mean, the moderator's doing a wonderful job, Brandon and the crew. So, you know, it's okay. It's not terrible, but I felt it should be brought up before it becomes an issue.
Well, thank you, Matt. You're definitely right. Hopefully everyone remembers that we're all a community in this together. Everyone's got the best intentions, and we all get along and work together.
One last thing I'd like to bring up before we completely leave the topic of Chief Delphi. Search before you post. I mean, a lot of redundant threads come up through the year, and it just becomes painful for a moderator to go through and remove everything. If, say, you have one topic that answers the entire question that's been answered maybe a month ago, and then you have about 30 new topics from people who don't understand something, it just creates a lot of headaches for people, and it just completely spams the forums, making it impossible for people to find what they're really looking for.
It also adds to the load that Chief Delphi is currently experiencing, which is somewhat debilitating to the site. And also, another point, sorry to keep ranting, guys, but if somebody does post something redundant and you reply with search before you post, there's nothing wrong with that. Just be nice about it. Don't make your post snappy. Just, you know, it might be a little out of your way, but it wouldn't hurt to just post, you know, here's the thread that would help you, you know, this is the search terms I use, just try to search before you post in the future. Just something nice like that with tact. Don't just be like, search before you post and snap at people, because you're not going to help them.
One last thing I want to add about the podcast is that we now have the new website up. We have a section for our hosts, the guests, show notes, and other things there, so go check it out. It's at podcast.openfirst.org. Just go there, check it out, and we're going to be updating all the information there as quickly as we can. So thanks, guys.
And don't forget, everyone, you can email us questions, comments, you know, yelling at me, whatever you want, at firstpodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to it.
We need stuff to report on. Come on, guys.
Yeah, we can't talk about it if you don't keep us informed. So, and, you know, if there's anything cool coming up, you have a pre-ship event that you want us to talk about, let us know. So, you know, we can tell people about it. We'd be happy. Sorry to cut the show short on you guys, but it's build season. We're all really busy. So, you know, have a good season. Good luck. And this is Matt Kress signing off.
This is Adam Richards signing off.
This is Joseph Matt signing off.
This is John Vinoon signing off.